Very excited to see Dial M for Murder, a stellar cast getting together for a terrific show. We're joined by Bree Houtman and by Ira Kramer. And let's talk first of all about, and I'll start with you, Bree, what drew you to this show?
Oh, well, I love a good murder mystery and spooky show, first things first. And also I love a good adaptation, and this is like famously done by Hitchcock. The Hitchcock film was like what people think of first when they think of Dial M. Like a lot of people grew up watching it, but it's a queer adaptation, and obviously a play adaptation of the story. So I'm always down for a classic story that is one queer, and to like, I can just tell it more modern and give power to the women that don't usually have as much power and just tell something in a different way. So yeah, that's what drew me.
What about you, Ira?
Yeah, I think, you know, having read this, I guess my first impression of this play was knowing, or of Dial M for Murder was this play. I wasn't really particularly familiar with the movie. And read it, I guess, about a year ago and really kind of enjoyed it and started to kind of latch on to it. I mean, and then to kind of speak to what Bree was talking about, it's a really interesting and very relevant dynamic in the love triangle that transpires here. And I think a very cool adaptation. I think furthermore, on a more personal note for me, getting the opportunity to play a villain is always fun and a challenge, right? Because at the end of the day, we have
such a nice guy that we get to see your acting chops. People going, I don't know if Ira can be a villain. Whoa, wait a minute.
Well, and that's the thing too, right? Well, regardless of how, you know, good or evil our character is, it's our job as actors to find where we really intersect with that character and where we relate with them, and or at least have a really good understanding of what their motivations and how they work and what makes them kind of tick. And that's been a challenge in some instances and really an interesting exploration. So I've been drawn to the character work as well.
Bree, you play Margot. Can you tell us a little bit about her character?
Yeah, she's, so it's set in the 50s. So she's, in a way, you can see her as a 50s housewife. She is kind of just like a high society gal that's just living her life to the fullest, very rich and, you know, like a normal, happy, successful life in the guise of like normal people. But she is like wants more in her life, and she clearly, she's in a loveless marriage, and she's, you know, she seeks out an affair for this reason. I don't think she seeks it out. I think it just kind of organically comes up. But she also is like intellectually stimulated by this woman. So I think she knows there's more out there for her than just like material things. But she's just kind of a conventional woman, at first look, with like a lot more depth that she wants to like explore for herself.
And Ira, what about Tony?
Yeah, I think Tony is very opportunistic, and is obviously, well, I think everybody is damaged goods to some degree. And I think if, as I'm starting to kind of unravel and understand his trajectory, and his motivations, I imagine a lot, he's always trying to make himself feel better by seeking status and seeking monetary things. And when he is hurt, he sees an opportunity to gain furthermore, inheritance money, right? So yeah, Tony is someone who's kind of worked his way up this ladder by association and by being opportunistic and getting into the right rooms and marrying into money and continuing that trajectory. And he's really kind of a silver-tongued, incredibly charming guy who will lead you to believe one thing, and it's all kind of, it's a lot of sleight of hand, right? I'm talking and doing this over here behind the curtain, or the duck's feet below are doing something completely different to kind of pull the wool over the eyes. So it's fun to find that balance. And yeah, Tony's a snake.
Yeah. We're talking with Ira Kramer, Bree Houtman of Penobscot Theater's upcoming production of Dial M for Murder. So without giving up too much away of the plot here, no spoilers, but there is a plot to commit murder. And then suffice it to say, things go wrong, and that's where the fun begins.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I think... Then you're seeing Tony kind of scramble to kind of cover up the tracks, and you always think that you've when you're plotting or planning something, or you know, it can be as, it doesn't have to be villainous, right? It's like you plan for a weekend away with the kids, and you've thought of every single thing, and you've brought this and you've packed that, and then all of a sudden it's like, cool, I didn't bring my bathing suit, I forgot my toothbrush, and you're scrambling to find a solution kind of on the fly and on your feet. And that's where I think a lot of the excitement is generated throughout the second act, is through this scrambling and improvising to cover tracks.
There's already so much tension baked into the script here, but I was wondering, Bree, setting it in this time period when, well, I don't know, I was going to say attitudes were different, but I don't know, the way the country's going, maybe attitudes are getting back more to the way they were then. But certainly that has to raise the stakes for, especially for your character in this.
Oh, definitely. I think that's why Jeffrey made this affair with a woman, or between two women, because before it was just like a woman's having an affair. And it was seen apparently... In this, the original version, it was seen as like very forward for the time. It's like, oh, the woman's having the affair instead of the man, like, OMG. But now it's like a queer affair. So like they could like face serious like penalty for this. It's like a big deal. And they also, oh, I don't want to spoil anything, but like it's very high stakes as a queer person at this time. So like, there's like all that more reason that Margot wants to live her like normal life and is really scared to for it to come out and her true self to come out, and wants to keep this affair under the wraps. On top of murder.
You've got, well, I hesitate to use the term, but for you, I will, Ira, a killer cast working along with you, and some familiar faces to Penobscot Theater goers with Ken Stack, Becca Novak, and Brad LaBrie. And boy, that's a pretty power-packed lineup of talent.
It's been an absolute pleasure to share the rehearsal space, and now we're down on the stage and respacing the show and about to jump into our tech weekend here. But yeah, getting to work alongside all of these folks has been, it's not, you're going to work, but you're going to work with coworkers who are, their attention to detail, their ability to be in a scene and play and start finding nuance early in the process is something that we've been fortunate to do, because we do have such a killer cast.
And Bree, can you talk about what it's been like working with Rebecca Bradshaw as your director?
Oh, awesome. She's amazing. She's just a really great communicator. And I think that's really important in director. And she's always framing things in like a way that just makes sense for actors. Like, we are all very different and we all have very different approaches, but she always like receives what you're saying. First of all, she allows us to have the space to like say what we want about the scene and like, and identify any like obstacles or any ideas we have. And she takes that and then like makes gold out of it, like spins gold out of it. And she's really good at bringing us together, I think, too, and like figuring out what we all need to make the scene work.
I'm curious, Ira, it's such an intimate show, and the Bangor Opera House stage, as you know, is so huge. I'm curious, what has the production team done in terms of design to bring everything a little bit closer and give you that sometimes claustrophobic setting?
Right. Well, it's a very cool set, set designed by Ches Cherry. The back flats or the back of the apartment are quite a ways down. So we're out on the thrust. Although the space has, at least as far as depth is concerned, really come forward, we still have a decent amount of width. So I don't think people are going to feel that we're far away. They're going to be kind of right in the living room with us. And the design elements are really nice. It's fun to, you know, be playing with these doors. And I know that sounds silly, but playing with the doors, and there's a little bench area that flips up and a couple of other little pocket door things that have been a lot of fun to play with. So I think it, while not feeling like there's like four or five actors swimming on this massive stage, I don't think you're going to get that feeling, but it still is going to feel grand because we do have that beautiful proscenium.
Well, it's such a great show, and you mentioned you had seen the play, Ira, first, and we're familiar that way, but I think for a lot of folks, it's the Hitchcock movie, and if anyone has not seen the stage production, it's, from my perspective as a theater goer, I don't know of many shows that have this level of tension where, as an audience member, you are literally on the edge of your seat, and I can't wait to see this wonderful production and this adaptation and this incredibly talented cast. Dial M for Murder at Penobscot Theater, playing through the 23rd of February. As always, give them a call, 942-3333. Visit them right there at the historic Bangor Opera House, or check them out online at penobscottheater.org for tickets and information. Can't wait to see you and your talented castmates. Bree, Ira, thank you so much for being with us, and break legs.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us. A pleasure to be here.